Hi, this is Keith Law. Welcome to episode 123 of The Keith Law Show. My guest today is Scott McCoy, the musician who's part of the Baseball Project and also who you might know from his bands The Young Fresh Fellows and The Minus Five. We are going to talk about the Baseball Project. They have a new album coming out. They're going to be touring. I will be going to see them at the show in Philadelphia in August, and talking a little bit about his baseball fandom as well. For those of you who subscribe to The Athletic, last week I did have a pair of posts that went up, I think actually on the same day at the end of the week. One, a little minor league scouting post on a couple of games I'd been to while I was in North Carolina, and another draft blog post on Max Clark, Dylan Head, Mac Horvath, Lou James Groover, and also Vance Honeycutt, who's a prospect for next year's draft. I've done draft traveling. That's all done for the spring. But that means that it is time to do mocks and further rankings. And it is Monday afternoon as I am speaking into my microphone right now, at which point I am almost done with what will be my first mock for this spring. I believe it is going to run on Wednesday, May 24th. That could always get pushed back a day, editorial priorities. But I will have done my part by tonight. By the time my head hits the pillow, that will be done. And my intention, at least, is to do a ranking of 100 names for the draft next week, and I will keep that big board at 100 names. It may change before the draft, but that is the most that I will actually put in any ranking. The mock, the plan is for that to be the first of four leading up to the draft. That is also always subject to change. It shouldn't be fewer. There's always a chance it'll be more if I happen to think I get good enough information that it's worth doing a partial or a full update between now and, say, the next scheduled mock. Also, for those of you who follow me for board game content, there will be another review of the Roland Wright Motor City that is scheduled to run on Paste on Thursday, May 25th. My guest today is musician Scott McCoy, who you might know as one of the founders of the bands The Young Fresh Fellows or The Minus Five, but who's here today to talk about his supergroup, The Baseball Project, who are going to be touring this summer to support their third album, Grand Salami Time, due out on June 30th. Scott, thank you so much for joining me.
Great to be here.
So, for folks who aren't familiar with The Baseball Project, and I should say, I saw The Baseball Project play at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 4 years ago in Cleveland. Tell us how the project came together, including the idea to make a band where you're just writing songs about baseball.
Well, it occurred between Steve Wynn and myself when we were at a party for the Rock and Roll, for when REM was being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the night before, there was a party, a reception, you know, at a restaurant, and we were hanging out. And Steve, being a friend of the band and going way back with Peter and the rest of the band, we're talking about, he said something like, you know, I always wanted to write an album of baseball songs. And I was like, I had the same idea, you know, I've been talking about that for years, but not really talking about it publicly or anything. And we said, great, let's do it. Let's do it together. And of course, I was pretty hammered at the time. And so I forgot about it completely. But Steve remembered it, even though I'm sure he was hammered too. But
sure.
but he remembered it. And he said, well, yeah, let's do that thing. And he was like, we'll come out to Linda and I'll come out to Portland. Linda can play drums. We'll come out to Portland. And so I booked some time in a studio. So I was like, okay, I booked a week in a studio. We're doing this. And so then we thought we better write some songs. And so we started feverishly writing songs and sending demos to each other. And we got excited. They came out and they recorded. We recorded with us. And then Peter came in and recorded, like, overdubbed on 12 songs in a day, mm-hmm. you know, as we will.
Yep. As one does. Yep.
And then he was like, well, you know, I might as well be in the band too, even though he's not as big of a baseball fan, you know, but he was like, you know, he likes playing rock music with us and the songs are great, whether you like baseball or not. And so we just ran with it. And then the first show we ever did was in Spain, which is totally weird.
Huge baseball country.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And Peter couldn't do that. And so we thought, well, Mike is a huge baseball fan. Let's see if he wants to do it. So he came and did it. And then he started filling in on times when Peter couldn't do it. And he just thought, we thought, well, this is silly. You should be in the band too. So, you know, by the third record, he was fully in the band and writing songs with us too. And so, yeah, here we are. I don't know, 15 years later since that first show. And actually the first show we ever did, yeah, the first live performance was actually on David Letterman, though. We played one song. We played Pastime on David Letterman, right? But I think before the record came out. And that was with Peter and Stephen, Linda, and I. So that was a good debut for the band.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So is it a real challenge to write songs, especially lyrics about baseball? Because obviously I love baseball. I grew up a huge baseball fan and a big music fan and a big reader too. And like, I think of baseball as this very literary sport and this very sort of, you know, it's more leisurely and it's inspired a lot of fiction, a lot of music, but a lot of the fiction is terrible. And like the songs about baseball, if I never hear Center Field or Talking Baseball again for the rest of my life, it will be too soon.
I got you on the we're providing an alternate.
I appreciate that very much.
An alternate universe, an alternate approach to baseball writing too, because you know, I mean, we probably have gone farther if we'd written songs that were really rah rah baseball, like Talking Baseball and like Center Field. You know, but we just don't do that. So people, like when our this label we're doing this new record for, Omnivore, they said, well, what cities, you know, are what players or songs about that we can get people behind it and you know, get local writers and stadiums? And I go, well, we don't really write those kind of songs too much. You know, some of our songs are even could be seen as critical or making fun of baseball, or you know, but at the heart of it is our love for baseball, you know, and for the reasons you said, it's a slower, more casual kind of thing. It's more literary. It feels like it's more literary kind of thing, because in its history is so rife with great stories. So after our first record, we made a great record. Everybody loved it, whatever. It was all good. But then we were doing the next record and somebody from the label said, well, maybe you could write some songs that aren't about people who've been dead for 100 years. I was like, okay, point well taken, you know? So, you know, we try to, you know, bridge that gap, you know, because a lot of the stories, I mean, honestly, the players in baseball, ancient history or whatever, mm-hmm. were more colorful than mm-hmm. today's players. You know, I'm sorry, any players out there who are listening to this, but you guys tend to be a little more boring than Big Ed Delahanty, you know?
Right. Yeah, got drunk and either thrown off or fell off a bridge. Right,
right, right, right. Exactly. And, you know, I mean, I get it. The pressure is so great now for players to be perfect and to be examples for people and to be at the top of their game all the time, because the competition is so fierce, you know? And so it's hard for me to imagine players like going out and partying, you know, when they have to play at the level they play. I'm sure it happens right. on occasion, but it seems like it's a real rarity, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even think they're doing greenies anymore or whatever, you know?
And not supposed to.
Yeah, nope. Exactly. You know, and all that stuff was just used to be part of the game. And you know, but it's about their physical condition has to be so over the top now, you know. I mean, you don't see very many Mickey Lolich guys out there anymore, you know, big bulky guys who are going out there and throwing 300 innings a season, you know, which maybe that means they should be more shaped like Mickey Lolich.
Yes, I don't know. More Zaftig. Yes,
yeah, right. but yeah. But so it's a. I guess your question. That's a long-winded answer. But yeah. I mean, it's every album gets further into it. It feels like it's a little harder to come up with subject matter, but we also feel like we haven't even begun to exhaust the stories too, you know?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I saw a track listing for the new, I've only heard the one song, Journeyman, but I saw a track listing and the second song I think is called The Yips, which first of all, I can't think of a more depressing baseball right. topic, right?
Right, right?
And for, I'm assuming most listeners know, but that is when a pitcher just completely loses the ability right. to throw a strike or just put the ball anywhere he wants it. And
not just
I don't want to get too much.
Not just pitcher. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember Steve Sachs.
Exactly.
Mackie Sasser, who really he just wouldn't throw, right? Oh yeah. My gosh, yes. And I mean,
they're
I've seen
they're all referenced in the song.
Oh, are they really? That's great. See, that's great. And also, oh my God, what a depressing thing to talk about. But to me, that goes to your point, right? We're not just writing
right.
Yay Baseball.
Right, right. Well, Steve wrote that song, mm-hmm. but I can say he made it a really fun rock and roll song. So you're not going to hear it and get depressed.
If it's not a funeral dirge.
If you examine it closer, you might, but it's a total rockin'. It sounds like ZZ Top kind of thing, you know? So it's a really fun song, you know, maybe not but, the people, you know, who are involved.
Right, who had it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
yeah, I have met a few of these people. So I think, I hope they're these folks I'm thinking of would be at a point where they could appreciate it because it's behind them.
Yeah. And I don't remember if Steve actually refers to them by name in the song. It's possible that he does, but he might have, you know, who he's singing about if you know, but I'm not sure if he zeroed in on them specifically. Yeah.
Gotcha. So you said, obviously, I know you're a big baseball fan. Steve's a baseball fan. So who are your individual teams? Other than, I know I've read before, Peter Buck's not actually a big baseball fan. He just likes to play music, which is fine. That also works.
Right.
But what
right.
is your various fandoms, your favorite team or teams, I guess, of everyone?
I came from the Bay Area, is where I grew up. So the Giants were my first team, then the A's. And I lived in Seattle for 25 years. So the Mariners came in too. So those are my three teams, if it's going to be three, but kind of go in that order, but you know, I love them all. So, you know, cause in the Bay Area, I don't know, it's not like Chicago where you, or New York, where you've got to be a Mets or Yankees fan or a Cubs or a White Sox fan. It's West Coast. We're more laid back. So it's okay to like the Giants and the A's, you know?
Right.
Okay. Some, you know, not with everybody, but in general, most people like, I like both teams, you know, they're great. So, I mean, so I was a Giants fan, but when the A's came, hey, what was not to like? they were excited too. And it was more games to go to, you know, more teams to root. So those are mine. Linda's from Minneapolis. So she's a Twins fan all the way. And Steve's from LA. So he's a Dodgers fan. But they've both been living in New York for 30 years now. So they're Yankees fans too. Yeah. But weirdly, in the last like 5 or 6 years, I don't know how long it's been, but they moved to Queens. And so they can walk to Citi Field from their house. So they kind of have to cut the Mets some slack too, because it's like, it's a talk about a home team. They can walk to the stadium. Yeah, which is great, which I've been there to their house many times. We walk to the games there, and it's so much fun, so much fun. We call it running the gauntlet, going down Roosevelt Avenue, because there's so many food carts on every side with every kind of amazing food. it's hard to make it to the
it's a challenge.
To the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, you bring a burrito in or whatever, but it's amazing. And then Mike, of course, is Braves, Atlanta Braves all the way. Mike is total Atlanta Braves. And Peter would probably say he's a Braves fan too, but he doesn't really care so much. So we had a joke on one of our second record. We sang a song about our favorite teams, and Peter just, we made him sing a little bit because he doesn't like to sing. We made him sing a little bit, and he said, you know, my favorite team is the Washington Senators. he said it just to be, you know, funny, but
just to be ornery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that about Stephen Linde too. So I grew up on Long Island. I haven't lived there in forever, but we were more of a Yankees household because my parents are both Bronx born and raised, but the Mets were closer. And my parents are also just not the type of people where it's like, no, you must hate this other team. It never occurred to me. And by the time I was old enough to run into kids at school, friends who were like that, I was like, I don't know, I can root for both. And back then they never played each other. So there's literally never a conflict to root for both teams.
Same with me with the A's and the Giants. There was no reason not to root for both of them, you know, except for the 89 series or 88 series. Yeah, but you know, that was just a wash because of the earthquake, you know. It didn't even matter who won at that point, you know. Yeah, but yeah, there wasn't a crossover then, like you said. So
right, so it was easy to do that, and I never thought it was strange. Yeah. It would be strange to say I'm a Yankees and a Red Sox fan. Like that was not allowed.
Although for some reason in Chicago, you got to be north side or south side for some reason. They don't, even though they didn't have any crossover at that point, it seemed like there was a real thing. It was a real, like a division between the kind of people who like the White Sox and the kind of people who like the Cubs or something like
right.
that.
I could see that in, I had some older relatives growing up, long gone at this point, but who were still Giants fans. And because, you know, the Yankee Stadium and the Giants Stadium were so close, it was like, you're Bronx and you're Manhattan.
Right,
like, I could see that.
Right.
But Bronx and Queens, I think it's, or, you know, any of those to Brooklyn for that matter, right? It's a little bit different, I think. I mean, I'm sort of imputing because I grew up in the suburbs. I'm not a city kid, but just thinking that way, like Yankees and Giants was like, people growling at each other across the river there.
It's hilarious because the Polo Grounds was literally a stone's throw from Yankee Stadium pretty much.
Right. You know? Oh, they could like see each other.
It's crazy.
Apparently.
It's crazy. Yeah. Because I've walked to the Yankee Stadium a number of times and I always walk across and try to go. I go to the site of the old Polo Ground.
Oh, very nice. I'm a Giants. I've still never been. Yeah.
I'm a Giants fan.
Sure.
And so it's really cool. And it's like right across the river, you know, it's right there. So amazing. But
yep. Yeah. It's one of my regrets. I did 2 years. I lived in Pittsburgh for 2 years when I was in graduate school and never went to the old Forbes Field site because I was just tied up in school and not thinking about it. And then it was time to move. And also at that point, the Pirates were not good and it was still Three Rivers. I love PNC Park, but they were just building it at that point. Shows you how long ago that was. Yeah. And then I left. It was like, well, that's dumb. I should have gone to see. I know it's just like a plaque and probably a little bit, you know, there's not much there, but still, just go see it.
I never saw
fan
that
of the sport.
Have you seen that? There's that museum across the street from the Rockies Stadium for Coors Field. There's this little museum that has one of the archways from Forbes Field. In the
oh, really?
Yeah, it's really cool. It's you can totally recognize it from the old pictures. It's this big weird little like archway that they've got in this museum there. So that's as close as I've been to Forbes Field. But I did go to Three Rivers in the early 70s. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to a few games there while I was in grad school because you could just walk up outside and people would, you know, you'd get a ticket for $5 at that point. They were so bad and nobody liked the stadium at that point.
Right.
And then, of course, it was Murphy's Law. I was that summer between my 2 years, I lived in Seattle. I had a summer job out there and they were building Safeco. Uh-huh. So I was living in two places where they built two of the most beautiful stadiums in all of Major League Baseball and got to go to neither of them during that span. Yes.
Yeah. I agree with you on those stadiums. They're both really, really nice ones. Really nice.
Yeah. I recommend PNC to anybody who's moderately a baseball fan and they're saying, what stadiums should I go see? It's so intimate. You can walk right across the river from downtown. And there's not a bad seat in that place anywhere.
No, it's fantastic. I love it too. Love it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
So as a baseball fan, I was curious, are you like, how do you follow? Are you more of a fantasy player? Do you follow just the big leagues? Do you follow prospects? Do you, are you like, you live and die with your team every night? We all sort of consume a little bit differently.
I used to be more that way, like just living and dying with my teams. But now, I mean, cause I've, you know, I used to be like listening on the radio. I grew up listening to the games on the radio, and I kind of miss that in a way, but I still can do that on my computer sometimes, or, you know, and I'll listen on my phone when I'm driving around and stuff like that. Cause we don't even, in Portland, we don't even get the Mariners games on the radio anymore, which really makes me so angry. Or if we do, it switches stadiums. I mean, it switches station like constantly. And I'm like, this is just, cause I love listening to games on the radio. I really do.
Yeah. I grew up doing that too.
Yeah. 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 For me, it was, you know, Lon Simmons and Russ Hodges, you know, were just like, just brilliant for the Giants. They were, and then Bill King for the A's was just amazing too. You know? And then I had, you know, many, many years of Dave Niehaus, who was just hilarious.
Yeah. One of the best.
Yeah. Just amazing. And Rick Riz, you know, who it was real kind of old timey kind of guy, and he's still doing it, but I still listen to those sometimes on the computer when I can, but I have become in the last like 10 or 12 years a fantasy nerd. So I kind of, I'm unfortunately kind of see it through that prism now a little bit, you know? So like I find me rooting for a guy who's on my team, who's like, you know, well, if he hits a home run, the Giants are going to lose, but you know, yeah, you know, that kind of thing, which is just really wrong. But I have to say I've fallen into it. And the reason I never wanted to play fantasy baseball, because I'd be on tour with REM. I would see Mike Bills, you know, in the dressing room, doing all his fantasy teams, you know, and he was always trying to talk me into joining one of his leagues. I was like, nah, I know if I do it, I'll become obsessive and I'll waste so much time. And he's like, no, it doesn't take that long. It's not a problem. Yeah. And then
that's a lie.
And then eventually when we started the baseball project, somebody from the label said, it'd be cool if you guys had a baseball league, you know, a fantasy league for the baseball project as part of a thing, you know? And so it was like, okay. So we rounded up a bunch of our friends and got them to join us, a lot of other musicians. And so we got this league, it's still going. And I've become exactly what I said I wouldn't. I'm obsessive. I spend way too much time on it, but all the rest of the guys in the league have more of a life than me, because they can't spend as much time as me, apparently. So I tend to win. I tend to win most of the time. So everybody else hates me.
Right.
because we don't have a limit on moves in our
Yahoo
thing. So I'm always like making 200 moves a year. Like the draft doesn't even matter to me, because, you know,
right. I'm just going to keep churning.
Yeah. I'm not going to keep them all.
Do you have like a little trophy that you bring around on tour? You'll bring it this summer, bring it out on stage. This is my five time.
Just have the little dumb little trophy in on the computer. That's it. But no.
Gotcha.
But we do talk about it a lot in the van on tour.
Ah.
We're making moves, you know, at the same time. There's three of us,
right?
Three of us making moves, you know. Oh man, he just picked up this guy, you know. It's like, it's really funny. So
Do you try to make trades on the road, whoever's not driving?
Yeah, our league doesn't trade very much for some reason.
Oh, okay.
It's really hard to do trades, but you know, the waiver wire is always really hot. It's always,
yep.
Yeah, we're always going on that. So it's pretty funny.
So will you still feel an affinity for the A's if they move to Vegas? Which, by the way, I will say I'll believe that when it happens, but
right.
At least that's the talk right now.
Right.
Like, will you follow the name, or will you say, nope, they're not a Bay Area team anymore?
It's going to ruin it for me a little bit, because it's just going to make me really mad. It's going to make me really angry, you know, because I know it's all about money and everything, but I don't think it's going to be a better place for them necessarily. I really don't. And their A's fans, are a pretty hardy bunch, you know, but they're not gonna go to Las Vegas with them. they're not gonna follow them at all, and that's gonna be a bummer, you know. I mean, there was at one point I was thinking, well, what if they moved to Portland? You know, that'd be great because I could root for them and I'd be here, they'd be here, and I could have a team to go see and everything. But I still don't want them to leave Oakland. I really don't, you know. Even if they came to Portland, I wouldn't. I mean, that would be a nice consolation if they moved here. But I don't want them to leave Oakland. You know, I think it's kind of a shame. And I don't know about Las Vegas. I mean, I was a Raiders fan since I was a kid. You know, and they went to LA, and I was kind of like, oh, this is gross, you know, because of course I hate every team from LA because I'm from
of course LA, so, yeah. As you're required to.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
It's in the contract.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So, you know, but I did get behind them a little bit when they were there because Jim Plunkett, they won the Super Bowl with him, and he was a Stanford guy, and I went to see him play all the games in Stanford home games when he was at Stanford. We had season tickets to them at that time, and so, you know, I was okay with that. But then I was really glad when they moved back to Oakland. But then they kind of ruined the stadium when they moved back, you know. So it's just been kind of an ongoing ugly scene, you know. But you know, the A's really didn't have as terrible of attendance as you would think. You know, they were still drawing pretty well. You know, even in the 2000s, you know, they'd get 1.7 to 2 million fans. You know, I mean, it wasn't like the Giants in the 70s when there was like 800 people there, you know.
Oh, out of Candlestick.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Right, the swirling. Yes.
Exactly, you know. And we almost lost them from the Bay Area numerous times too.
As yes, Mariners, Denver, Tampa. I remember all that.
Almost lost the Mariners numerous times too, but until they built Safeco. And well, 95 kind of changed everything for Seattle, but then they needed the new stadium and they got it. But I don't like this whole billionaires bribing people to pay for the stadiums, you know. It seems wrong to me. So I don't know, but yeah,
I always pay for your own.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what I feel like too. But so I don't know. I don't know what'll happen with the A's. If the A's go to Vegas, it's going to be hard for me. It's going to be hard for me to keep them up there, you know? Yeah.
And any thoughts on your Giants this year, who've, I think they've been, you know, since that great year, two seasons ago, right. It's been a little bit disappointing and they've had some guys just kind of not quite play up to expectations.
No, they actually do have a little bit of a farm system now, which they had nothing going for a long time, and now they finally got some people coming up that seem pretty worthy. But you know, I mean, that's season two years ago was just came out of nowhere. Nobody saw it coming. I certainly didn't. I was like, oh, they're going to be really bad this year again. And but it's like, you know, 107 winning 107 games. Nobody saw that coming. That was just
nope.
And there were a bunch of like, you know, kind of like sort of over the hill or has been kind of pitchers that they somehow refound themselves. You know, Gausman became great that year, and they're still having some success with these reclaiming these pitcher guys, but the stadium isn't quite as favorable for pitching now, but which is good because they couldn't ever get any hitters to come there after Barry Bonds. Nobody else wanted to come and hit there because it's so hard to hit home runs there. Although it wasn't for him, but I wasn't. I don't expect much from them in recent years. Even after they won 107 games, I didn't expect they'd be that good the next year. And I think, you know, they're doing a fair amount with what they've got this year. They're doing all right with the personnel, you know. So, you know, it's a tough division to be in, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But look at the Padres. The Padres are spending so much money. So every year And what's it getting them? I mean,
second place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the Dodgers are just always great. No matter how many guys get hurt, they always have somebody else to come up and take over. Yeah. It's
Bobby Miller to pitch on Tuesday. Oh, we got a guy throwing 102.
Right.
And he couldn't make our rotation.
Right. Right. Exactly. And they've always had a great farm system, you know, even, and they've got tons and tons of money. Yeah, which the Giants has neither of those really comparatively. Yeah, so
right. I will say the Giants. It went just in the last week. They moved outfield prospect Luis Matos, who was not good last year and maybe a little hurt, but just not good. Huh. Great start at Double A. Moved him up to Triple A. Marco Luciano, who's been hurt last week or so, it looks like he's finally starting to hit because he had a late start this year. I mean, those two got a lot of. The health of that farm system, and I think the health of the lineup going forward is going to depend on those two guys got to pan out. They've had a bunch of guys, the Joey Bart's not panning out.
Right.
They need a couple of these big time, highly rated by all of us.
They got the other young catcher. They're trying him now that Bart's hurt.
And Patrick Bailey. Yeah. Yes.
He looks really good behind the plate. He's defensive.
That was his reputation.
Good. He's really good, but, and he's, you know, who knows how much he'll hit, but he looks really good defensively, but
yes,
but you know,
that'll get you a long way,
but they use like 2 first-round picks on him and Bart, you know, I think.
Yeah.
So they got to have one of them at least, hopefully better.
One of these needs to be our catcher.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly. I hope Luciano comes through. Cause they're counting on him for sure.
Yes.
But
yep.
He's
got talent.
They haven't had great success with draft picks so much.
No, I agree. So last question I wanted to ask was just since you've got Grand Salami Time coming out at the end of June, it's your first record in, I think, 9 years. So what brought everyone back together to not just put out a record, but I'm super excited you guys are touring.
We've been talking about doing it for years. We even scheduled recording sessions like 5 years ago. We had this idea. We wanted to. Linda was really fired up to record with Mitch Easter, you know, and get Peter and Mike to go back there where they made the first couple REM records, you know, and stuff like that. We thought that'd be really cool. That'd be great. And so we scheduled it a couple times. It never really happened. We kept putting it off, and then you know the whole pandemic thing happened, and so it just like the years just kind of dragged on. We played shows. We did some touring in the meantime, but it just finally came together a year ago. We took 2 weeks and we managed to, you know, we managed to find a window that wasn't raging. It was still a thing, but we all got out there and we just banged out the record. We had so much fun with Mitch. Mitch is amazing. And it was just really, great. So it was just something we'd put off for a long time. We tried to get it together. We finally, all the things lined up, you know, and so we got there and did it, and it was fantastic. It was just really great. We had a lot of songs, and we didn't even record all of them, but we recorded like 16 songs, I think. And great because we were able to set up like a band and just play the songs, and it felt like they were done almost as soon as you got a take, you know. We didn't have to add that much to them. It's really a great feeling, especially after the last like two years where Peter and I were recording in the basement, you know, and sending tracks to people across the world, and sometimes across Portland, because he wasn't even coming over to my house for a year, you know. We were so it felt really good to get in a room and just play together, and we're all such good friends. It was just amazing time, and it was really great to revisit that kind of REM vibe with Mitch and everything too. And so I think it comes out a little bit on some of the songs, like Journeyman. It's got a little bit of a REM feel because Peter wrote the music to like 5 or 6 of the songs too, which is really, really great too. So it wasn't quite as much as just me writing songs or Steve writing songs. You know, we collaborated a lot with Peter and Mike had written a new song, which was really great. So yeah, it's really exciting. And we managed to find a month where we could get everybody to go out go out and play.
Yep.
And so that's going to be really fun too.
That's fantastic. I know Magister's known as the, you know, REM's original producer or early producer. Oh. I always, every time I hear the name, I think of Let's Active. Highly underrated. Oh, yeah. 80s oh, yeah. jangle pop band. Yep.
Oh,
every
yeah.
word means no. Still incredible. A classic.
Incredible.
Yep.
We got him to play a little bit of guitar on a song or two, but he was like, yeah, you guys don't need me. And we're like, yeah, but we want to, because you're so good. A couple songs, I think there was one or two songs where I was playing a guitar solo or Steve was playing one, and we're just like going, why are we doing this when you're sitting right here? Right? Yeah. So we got him to do a little of things. I think I have a song about Otani. We said, we got wrote about somebody in the present.
There you go. Somebody contemporary.
Yeah. And
love it.
And I think Mitch played a little guitar on that. It's so it was really exciting to have him involved. Yeah.
My guest today has been Scott McCoy of the band The Baseball Project. They will be on tour starting on August 8th, including a show in St. Augustine, Florida, featuring Jason Isbell.
Yeah.
Their third album, Grand Salami Time, will be out on June 30th. Scott, thank you so much for joining me.
All right. Thanks a lot, Keith. It was a real pleasure to talk to you.
That's all for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I do just want to mention, for those of you who are on some of the Twitter alternatives that keep popping up out there, I am on Spoutable at Keith Law. I am on Blue Sky. It's Keith Law, I think, .bsky.social, whatever. If you look for it, you'll see my picture. It's pretty obvious that it's me. I'm still on the Twitter. I hate it. More than I always used to say I hated it, but now I really hate it. But I'm still there. I will probably still be there as long as the site is still up and running, even if it is actually in flames. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Thanks for reading. Stay safe.